Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up, everybody, and burn down, burn down. The system fails, the exit moves. Wake up, the silence returns.
Back and better than ever. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show. After technical issues last week, I am here. Sayla Janelle Alexander Brown is here, and we are ready to do this. So I'm excited. How are you, Alex?
Oh, I am surviving it. I am ready to go. I'm sipping my hot apple cider spiked with Jägermeister. I am smoking my vapor. I am ready.
Yep. I am here, nesting in bed with all my blankets with my laptop. I am ready as well, because this is the high life for us, apparently. But we are glad to be back. Thank you so much to the people from Blog Talk for helping us set the episode this week. That was awesome of them to come in and help us. We are going to be talking to an amazing author, author of the Oblivion Trilogy, and also a contributor to Southern Haunts. We will get to that in just a minute. First off, we wanted to mention, you know, I know I feel strongly, and Alex feels strongly as well, I think, you know, part of one of the great things about Seven Star Press, which is the basis of this show, one of the big promoters of this show, is that, you know, we bounce back and we hang in there through a lot of stuff. And we want to dedicate tonight's show to a very special lady. Today would have been her birthday. So we were dedicating this show to Mrs. Zimmer. And we just want to send a lot of love and good vibes out to every one of our friends who's going through stuff tonight. You know, we know people have had some hard times and things happen. But we are with every single one of you, and we're just going to walk through this and rock it out.
Agreed. We might all work together, but you know what? We're all family, too. So family sticks together.
Yeah, we do. Huh. So anyway, announcement-wise, I don't have a lot. My book, Old School, is currently blog touring with TLC Book Tours. My page, I've been trying to post info there. I'm not up to date with all the reviews yet. You can sort of keep up with that on Facebook.com. Author SJ is my Facebook page. So that's what I've got going on. Anything that you know of, Alex, that we need to talk about?
One or two little things, pretty much. I have a book signing coming up at Lorelei Books here in Vicksburg, Mississippi. It's going to be on October 24th, and there is going to be another book signing here in Vicksburg at Cafe Paradiso. It's a coffee shop behind the Walgreens, and pretty much it's going to be myself, Southern Haunts 2 author Della West, and also Southern Haunts illustrator, inside illustrator actually, Robert K. We'll be there Halloween greeting the public. We're going to be all bloody because we'll be attacked by zombies by then. So it'll be fun.
That's awesome. That reminds me, this just happened. I'm doing a signing up near Columbus, Ohio. I need to actually find the right address or else people are going to kill me. But there's a group of us, I believe It's near Grove City or somewhere. I'll have to look. I'll have the real address or city next week. We are doing sort of a collective signing. I'm going to be there. Chris Brown and Violet Patterson is going to be there. So it's going to be really cool. And we're kind of experimenting with getting a group of us doing stuff in the Midwest. So that's going to be our test run. So that'll be on the 25th, Saturday.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like we have a little bit more going on than what we thought.
I know, right? Oh, amazing. All right, then. Let us get this show on the road. Alex, do you want to introduce tonight's guest?
Sure. I would like to introduce a very lovely guest by the pen name of C.G. Bush. She goes by Crystal for her friends, and I feel really honored to be able to call her Crystal tonight, but... I met her about a year ago in Columbia, Mississippi. It was a book signing for the original Southern Haunts book, and she had expressed to me that she was an author, and with her being in her teens, I was more interested to learn more about her considering how young she was. Whenever I have young adults come up to me and they express that they love to write, they want to contribute to the literary world, I'm more interested in them than anyone else because they are so young and they have so much ahead of them. And when Crystal said that she was into writing, I offered for her to be a part of the Southern Haunts book. I said, you still have to put the work into it. You have to make your story shine because if you hand me something that I can't do nothing with, I can't do nothing with it. And so she sends me a story that was really good. I felt that it had potential to it, and I went on and put it in there, and I'm glad I did. And she submitted to Southern Haunts Part 3, and there is so much growth. I love to see writers grow, and C.G. Bush is one of those writers. How are you doing tonight, Crystal?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Surviving it. Well, are you enjoying the cold weather so far? Are you getting in the mood for Halloween?
Oh, I love the cold weather. I don't like the summer that much, but Halloween, October is my favorite month of the year.
Awesome. Yes, it's my Christmas.
Amen.
Yeah, I'm just needing to get candy now. It's either I get candy or I have eggs thrown at my house, one of the two. And, you know, just to say that wet cracking sound scares the hell out of me in the middle of the night, just saying. But anyway, so Crystal, what made you want to be an author?
Well, part of me wants to say I don't really think I had much of a choice. Because after I typed the end on that first short story when I was, like, 11, it was like I knew what I wanted to do, and I wanted to write, and that's all I wanted to do at every point of the day. But what really wanted me to become an author was I feel like it's my duty almost to give back to all the people and all the books that I've read before. They were more of an escape, and I wanted to give an escape to someone else.
That's really,
awesome.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. Well, since you mentioned, you know, being inspired by different things you've read and things like that, who are your inspirations? Where do you draw, you know, fire and spirit from? Who have you sort of made you really want to do what you do?
Lovecraft and Edgar Allan
yeah.
Poe.
Yes.
Then there's Derek Landy and a bunch of other mystery authors. And then Alex, of course, because I love your work, Alex.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, she said the magic words there, H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Allan Poe.
Amen.
Gotta have them.
Yeah, gotta have them.
Well, why do you decide to write in the genre of fantasy horror? I mean, you just explained to us who some of your inspirations were, but, I mean, we have tons of authors out there who reads in multiple genres, and they write something completely different than what they read. Why horror fantasy for you?
Well, I've always been one of those weird kids that loved scaring people, and I've been one to rather walk around a graveyard than a park. And it just, it comes more naturally to me than trying to write, say, romance or a Christian Western novel. It's just something that comes natural, and that's the kind of stuff I love to read, to watch. If there's something spooky going on, you can bet I'll be in the middle of it.
I knew I liked you.
That's awesome. So a lot of people go into writing, you know, some with different expectations, let's say. I think that's a good way to word it. So do you want to make a career of your talents, or is this more of a side thing for you? Like, what do you feel writing is in the scheme of things for you? Because a lot of people have a lot of different viewpoints on this.
I would love to make it into a career, because that is, like I said before, this is what I want to do. I want to share stories with the world, and I just want to give those kids out there that can't actually leave wherever they're at and whatever situation they're in, I want to give them an escape. And if I can make a career out of that, that would make me completely happy.
You're in it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Now, you've already expressed somewhat what your goal is for the reader. You've expressed that it is a form of escape. Now, also, what other goals might you have when you present a story? Do you want people to connect to the characters? Do you want people to connect to the scenes? Do you want them to connect to everything in general? When you create a story, what is your particular goal within that story?
For the Oblivion trilogy, Oblivion's Heart, when I started that story, I started it with the idea that believing is seeing. And I wanted to get across that just because things are different, it doesn't mean they're necessarily bad. And I have different points in every one of my books, kind of like that, but I think that is the first thing on the back of the book, is believing is seeing, and Ava's struggle through the entire series is just because someone or something is different, just because it kind of seems scary does not mean it's scary.
That's really awesome. You're kind of taking
yeah.
the Clive Barker approach to it.
Yeah, a lot of good points. So within all these, you know, that viewpoint and other things that you've talked about, what, you know, a lot of different horror and fantasy authors write different styles of characters, and they go sort of into the story through different vantage points via their characters. What style of character is your favorite?
I really like the complex type characters, because you can do more with them. I really like going into the stronger type characters, because it's easier for me to write, but there's so many sides to each character that I come up with.
Let me throw this question at Crystal and Selah. One of my favorite kind of characters to work with are the gray characters. It's the character where you cannot determine, is this person a villain? Is this person
mm-hmm.
a hero or heroine? It's that kind of character where this individual does a few bad things, but then they make that one choice that makes up for all of those bad things.
Uh-oh.
It's almost kind of like the Jekyll and Hyde embodiment.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to see if y'all had already worked
Sorry.
With characters like that, or if you had planned on working with characters like that, and maybe how could you shine some light on how to develop that equality between the good and evil?
Once again, I'm going to use the Oblivion trilogy. I have a bunch of characters like that. In the second book, I am trying to work with one of them that's just a little bit shady, but you want to trust them, but you don't know how. How I normally develop this character is I try to create a really good character at first, and then I try to create a really bad character. So basically, I'm giving him, well, basically, he's bipolar. So I am trying to even out, like, okay, so he has to have a reason for doing whatever he's doing. And it's kind of hard, but you need to put yourself in the place of that character. And if you want to make him good, then give him good reasons. And even though if he turns out to be bad, he might have some good reasons up in there somewhere. It's just a process that I think you would have to come up with on your own a little bit, just trying to play around with some things.
See, for me, I feel like, maybe this is just my thing, I feel like, I don't know if it was growing up in the 80s or what, but I really connect to characters like that. They fascinate me. I've always really liked, like, those are the characters, like, in, you know, Neil Gaiman's, like, Sandman, like, the Morpheus, because he's done some really awful stuff and some really great stuff. Those are the characters that really keep me in it long term. Like, I mean, I grew up, like, I've been talking to friends this week about, like, Labyrinth. To me, Jareth is, like, the best character because you really don't know if he's a villain. I mean, okay, he's in the villain role, but he could be a villain. That could be Sarah's perception of him. You really, truly, if we're being honest, don't know what his motivations are, per se. And I think a modern example, like Loki in the Thor movies and Avengers, you know, he is so all over the map. That's why it's a good character, because he can turn on a dime and do what he wants. And for me, I like writing characters where, okay, it may be... I've started a vampire series, kind of. Like, I've had one story in the Big Bad anthology, and then the prequel to that will be in the next one, and I'm hoping to take it into a book. But, you know, the characters in that, and some of the characters in Old School, I feel like I like having the options, like a full-bodied set of options where, you know, it's not about is the character evil or are they good. It's where are they coming from? What do they want? And not just what do they want overall, but what do they want at the given moment? So that may change from book to book, chapter to chapter. You know, creatures like Clyde in Old School are very selfish, but, I mean, doesn't mean he's necessarily bad. He's just kind of working the situation for how he sees it should be. But, you know, he's also a great big help to the characters.
You know, the first time I had ever encountered this sort of character where it was actually brought to my attention, it was maybe 1991, 1992. I was just a kid in elementary school. It was when Batman Returns hit theaters. And mm-hmm. I hadn't been there the opening night to see it, but my cousin had seen it, and I'd overheard him speaking to my mom. He's like, well, it's good, but, you know, Catwoman couldn't make her mind up if she wanted to be good or bad. And so when I went into that knowing what to look out for, I really mm-hmm. watched a lot of her mannerisms in that. And it is the living in the moment type of scenario. And also bringing back to Jareth in Labyrinth mm-hmm. with Jareth, he's one of those characters where you know he's the villain, but he's charismatic. He's comedic.
Well,
he is almost kind of like someone you want to know a little bit more.
Oh, I totally hang out with him. Are you kidding? Yeah. Sorry.
It's like you kind of want a backstory. Okay, well, he seems like a very likable guy, but why does he want to turn children into goblins?
But let me tell you, all the backstories I've seen, whether it's fan fiction or whether it's actually, like, sanctioned stuff, are terrible. Like, that's why I'm, like, very, like, I never want a sequel or anything for Labyrinth, because it just is never handled well. Like,
well,
I don't know
how true this is. It could just be internet gossip, but...
I saw that. I'm ignoring it.
Yeah. It's one of those things, if I ignore it, it'll go away, but... They're supposed to be doing a Labyrinth Part 2 with none of the original cast.
No, absolutely not. No. That's how I feel about that. But, no, I agree. Like, I mean, he is definitely in the villain role. And I know I've read, like, Jim Henson's interviews on maybe not necessarily that, but whether he thinks, like, the events in the movie are real or are they imagination or whatever. Be that as it may, I like that movie because for the big part, because you really don't quite know for sure how much truth there is to anyone's perception. Like, is Jared actually just giving Sarah what she wants? Is he a villain because she wants him to be? Is he, you know, what actually is he? So that's why I like him. And that's what, like, with Thor, that's what fascinates me with Loki is because he's very, you know, self-motivated. And he kind of has a right to be in some points, you know, and he doesn't in others. You know, it's a very fascinating character. And I, you know, to me, I get where people want to cast people black and white, good and evil type of thing. Very few people are like that. I don't consider myself necessarily all great. I mean, I try to be, you know, kind and compassionate, but God knows we all have our moments. And, you know, I don't feel like characters should be divided up like that because that makes them less interesting by precasting them as one thing or the other.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And, well, we've listed some of our iconic characters. What are some of your iconic characters, Crystal?
Well, I'm going to have to think about that one for a minute. I'm going to bring Derek Landy back into this, or I don't know if I said his name before, but he, writer from, I think he lives in Dublin, but he writes Skullduggery Pleasant series, and it's about a magic skeleton detective. And through the entire series, which the last book came out, which I have not read yet, but you can't really tell if he's good or if he's bad, and he's the main character, and that is just one of my favorite things because he has a sense of humor and he's like, he can drop it and he's like this terrifying person and just 2 seconds, and through the entire book you're just wondering, okay, is he really trying to save this person or does he have ulterior motives?
That's excellent. I'm going to have to look into that. That sounds like something I would enjoy. Now, I think, you know, every author has a lot of stories. I think, you know, we all kind of acquire, whether it's through promoting or doing different stuff or, you know, developing a story or in the actual process of writing, things happen, weird stuff. I mean, I think we all, like, no one would probably believe autobiographies ever when it comes down to it. So what is one of the most bizarre experiences you've had with your writing?
Well, let's see. A few of the fans, that's one of the most bizarre things was when I was writing Oblivion's Heart, I would stay up basically all night because I wrote it for the National Novel Writing Month, where you wrote it 50,000 words in 30 days or 31 days, I can't remember. But I would stay up every night so I could get my word count in. And when I got to about the middle of the book, this strange thing started happening. In the book, Ava starts hearing sort of whispers and voices out of just, you know, sometimes you walk around the house and you think you hear someone call your name, you turn around and there's nothing there. You're completely alone. So I used some of that in my book. So I'm sitting there typing a scene where Ava's hearing things. And I start hearing these something just whispering. And I look up from my laptop and I'm looking around and I'm like, there's no one here. It's like 2 a.m. Everyone should be asleep. So I just, you know, shrug it off, start typing again, and a few minutes later I hear a whisper again, and I look up again, still nothing, and all of a sudden my sister yells goodnight and slams my door. I jumped out of my chair, scared me to death. Apparently she'd been standing at the door talking to me for a good 10 minutes and I had ignored her the entire time.
Wow, talk about getting involved in your work.
Yeah, I'm really bad about that too.
Yeah, with me, all you see is the back of my head and the front of the keyboard. That's about it. The computer screen, that's it. Yep. Well, we had mentioned earlier about this cool weather we're getting and also Halloween approaching. What are your plans this Halloween?
Well,
hopefully not egging my house.
No, I'm not egging your house. I'm just going to hide in the shower and wait for you to walk in. So on, I have a bunco game at the Summerall Library that we're doing costume party to, and I'm not actually sure what I'm doing on Halloween. I know I'm dressing up. I'm pretty sure I'm just going to walk around campus. I'm not actually sure what I'm doing on Halloween. All I know is the bunco game a few days before.
You can have some fun on campus being dressed up. My mom tells me
a story
of when she was in college. She had dressed up as Alice Cooper, and she waited in the elevator and hid to the side, and whenever someone would walk into the elevator, she would just stand there and grin at them, and they would run out. So.
Oh, that's fun.
That's beautiful. Oh, my gosh. That makes me so happy, Alex. It's awesome. Well, with all the talk of Halloween, you know, and everyone has their own interpretation of things and what's real and what's not. So do you believe in ghosts?
Yeah. Yes, I believe in ghosts.
What's some of your experiences, maybe? Can you share that with us? Inquiring minds want to know.
Well, there have been quite a few, especially here in the past few months. But let's see, some of the more interesting times. I have... Well, at the house, we call it Caroline. I think that's what I ended up naming it. But I have things that disappear around my room all the time. And one time, it was a pair of earrings I was supposed to wear, and I had laid them out and everything. And I go out and come back in, and they're gone. And I go into my sister's room, and I was like, okay, very funny. You took my earrings. I need them back. I have to... go in a few minutes, and she said, I didn't go into your room. I haven't been into your room all day. And I was like, well, you're the only person who would take my earrings. So she decides to prove her innocence to come and help me find the earrings. We searched my entire room, and I was like, okay, well, you walk out before me, so I know that, you know, you're not just going to sit them down. Well, she walks out of the room, and I did not see anything on the desk when I turned off the light and walked out. 2 seconds later, I forgot my keys, walked back in, turned the light on, and they're sitting straight right there in the middle of the desk, perfectly lined up, and I'm sitting there like, okay, well, that's something. It's also happened to all my pairs of pants were magically folded and put in the back of my closet and under my bed, and just clothes disappear, and they'll show back up. And then there's the chargers, just random things that I'm supposed to be using very soon just start vanishing, and they'll show back up later.
I've had the same problems. If I could tell you how many weird things I found in my refrigerator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this is beyond the body parts. I mean, you know, weirder than that.
Nice. I once was missing a pair of pants I absolutely had to have for the next day, and I didn't find them in time, so I ended up having to, you know, hurry and make something else work, but I ended up finding them like a week later inside a chair cushion.
Now, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird.
Had you washed the chair cushion,
No, this is like an antique, or not an antique, but like something that isn't like, yeah, we don't wash it. Like, it was like stuffed,
okay.
Like I suddenly, yeah.
So it wasn't one of the kind of cushions where you take and wash it? And...
No. This
okay.
is like the actual cushion, kind of like has a zipper that opens it up. And like, I only found it because like, part of the cushion was off the chair, and it was something dark, and it was like half hanging out to the back of the thing. And I asked like everyone, and they were all had no clue. Like, they thought I had done it just to be funny, and I don't know. No.
Well, maybe I can share this without the phone messing up this time, because the last time I talked about voodoo, the phone messed up, and we all had to call back in. So
oh yeah,
what really kind of got me into Santeria, I guess that's more so the terminology of what I'm into, because it's the worship of saints. When I really got into it, I had lost my work keys, and I had already mm-hmm. left work. I had the keys with me. I'd locked up my workplace, and I went with my family to eat, and then after that, I had to open up the following morning. Well, I had my keys with me that morning, and then somewhere along the eight-hour shift that I worked, my keys disappeared. And anyway, I was freaking out. I was like, oh, my God, I was chain-smoking. And I was on Facebook like, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. I'm going to be jobless now. And someone's like, well, pray to St. Anthony. And so anyway, mm-hmm. did a major prayer. And later that night, my mom and dad, they went back to the restaurant that we had been at the night before, and they just decided to go back for more food. They sat down at the table, and anyway, my mom had the initiative to ask, hey, did anyone leave some keys here last night? And the waitress was like, oh, yeah, here they are. To this day, I cannot explain how I used my work keys to open up work for the morning, had them with me, never left that building, but somehow they made it all the way back to the restaurant that I ate at the night before.
Wow.
That's one of those things I'll never be able to explain. And
your keys were hungry.
I know, right? speaking of things that are kind of bizarre and everything, with your story for Southern Haunts 2, Crystal, Southern Haunts 2, the concept was to become inspired by a location that could have possibly been the location for demonic activity. And what you presented us was the fear that quite a few people have, a sideshow-style haunted house that people pay to get in and have good scares on for Halloween, actually being a house that is demonically possessed. Could you shine some light on your story for Southern Haunts Part 2, like how you got some of the character development there, how we got the story in general, like what the inspirations were all the way around?
When I first started talking to you and told me about what it was about, I started looking and asking around Columbia if anyone had heard of any ghost stories or anything that I could be able to use to come up with a story. And I think it was my grandmother that said, well, there's the Failer House in Bethel. And I was like, okay, don't know what that is, but she's like, oh, I know the owner. So I called the owner of the house, and she's like, yeah, you can go in and look around. And so I ended up getting my parents and sister all in the car because everyone wanted to go to see the house because apparently it's very pretty and spooky at the same time. So get out there, and apparently no one told me that this was a haunted house when I was walking in the door. So I ended up walking straight into a haunted house without realizing it, and you know how scary it is when you trip a one of those spook things, something jumps out at you. If you trip something and you're not expecting it, it's the middle of the day, it's probably like August, there's not supposed to be anyone in here. I scared myself silly in that house. And I was like, okay, well, I'm pretty sure I want to keep this thing as a haunted house because this house is massive. It's counting the attic, it's three stories, and it's kind of run down, and it's made completely out of cinder blocks. And it's a really pretty old house, but it's big, and there's holes everywhere. They're still trying to renovate it, but still they make it into a haunted house every year. So walking through the house, you have to watch where you step. I went up to the attic and walked around, which was really creepy because while I was in the attic, apparently my dad or mom was on the first floor calling, or first floor or second floor calling for me, and I should have been able to hear them yelling my name, but I was in the attic taking pictures and looking around, and I heard nothing. It was dead silence. I didn't hear any birds or anything. It was just all the windows were knocked out, so there was no reason I shouldn't have heard anything. And that kind of creeped me out. But when I started coming down the staircase, I heard my mom just yelling, and she was like, okay, if you don't answer, I'm going to come up there, and don't really want to come up there, so you better answer. So I come down, and I was like, okay, well, I'm still alive. But I was like, well, I have to keep this house as a haunted house, because that is, it is kind of creepy how it fits in. I wanted it to stay kind of Halloween, because it was coming up, and even though it wouldn't be Halloween when the people were reading the story, I loved Halloween so much I wanted to keep that. The characters were kind of like, I didn't really have anyone to base it off of, so I just decided to use the school newspaper. I was like, why would four kids want to be in a haunted house the night before it opens? And I'm pretty sure you could come up with a bunch of other reasons, but I was like, school newspaper, they want to get a few pictures of it before it opens. And so the characters just kind of slowly develop themselves. The funny thing about some of the rooms in the thing that made it just hit me with the demonic and how it could use the house in the story was there were tiny rooms where, like, off the sides. And I don't know what they were used for, but I'm pretty sure it was, like, the servants' quarters. But you would open it up small. There was a tiny door in the wall, and you could tell, like, there had been someone living in that room at some point. And that was one of the creepy parts. And I put that into the book with one of the characters going into one of those rooms. And it was cramped, it was small, it was stuffy, and I was like, if this door slams behind me, I am, you know, I'm gonna die. Through the entire walking through the house, I was coming up with ideas like, oh, it would be funny if this would happen, and I was like, I probably shouldn't say that because I feel like something's gonna come out from behind this giant Christmas tree because the house is also used as storage and just shoved me out the window. So a bunch of things that happened in the book, I was just standing in the room coming up with ideas like, oh, well, this would be pretty cool. And I ended up scaring myself so many times in that house. It was fun.
Awesome. Well, that really does shine quite a bit of light on why particular things are happening in this house. So, okay, cool. You had actually walked through there, and as an author, if you have that advantage, go for it, because that is going to be some firsthand experience that you can put down on pen and paper. Now, on your story for Southern Haunts 3, we had required stories to be witchcraft-based, voodoo-based, hoodoo-based, anything that regards the occult in the South. Now, this also does include cursed items. And you had submitted a story that is in regards to not only a cursed item, but also the ghost of a voodoo priestess. And could you elaborate on your tale for the third Southern Haunts book?
Well, that one's kind of funny. There is a trunk at my house that I was supposed to bring to school with me, but I didn't get the handles put on. It used to belonged to a voodoo priestess who lived in New Orleans, and I think she might have died a few years ago, but I'm not completely sure. But it used to belong to her, and long story short, I got the trunk. Dad restored it for me so I could use it to put stuff in. And after I got the trunk, I have Jen Mulvihill, she's the one who pointed out that it probably could be the trunk that was causing all of this. But I had the worst week of all time. where I, in one day, I broke an oven that morning, and I accidentally set a vacuum cleaner on fire that night. And the next day, I ended up swimming in the Walmart parking lot, chasing my shoe, and getting completely soaked. And I was, like, really not happy that week, because when you set a vacuum cleaner on fire, you know you were having a very bad week. So after all of those things happened, it just sort of became a joke that the trunk was causing all of it, and I could not, for the life of me, come up with an idea that I wanted to write about. So I ended up, I was really pushing the deadline because I had written maybe 3 different stories to submit, but I did not like any of them. They weren't right. So I ended up talking to, I think, you and Jen and a few other people in Jackson one day, and you guys were like, well, try writing about the trunk. And so after writing about the trunk, it came very easily. So that's how I ended up turning in that story.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, for people who haven't read Southern Haunts 2, they're in for a treat with your story. And then when they see what you've contributed with Southern Haunts 3, The Priestess's Trunk, I believe they will be extremely pleased to see how your talents have moved you into a further direction within the horror field.
Thank you.
So beyond writing and all of your experiences that we've talked about so far, what are some of your hobbies? What do you like to do in your downtime when you're not planning out your next work of fiction?
I really like reading, and I collect books. I have multiple copies of a ton of my favorite books in different editions. My sister makes fun of me for it, but I like playing piano, painting and drawing. I like creating things. Anything that I could create, I really like and enjoy doing that.
Awesome. Now, with the piano playing, that's something I've always wanted to try. I've never been musically inclined, speaking of which, about a month or so ago, I bought a ukulele. I'm like, yay, this will be easy to learn. And I'm like, damn, this is hard.
Yeah, so. I really, really enjoy playing the piano. It's one of the things that, if I'm getting really upset with a story that's not turning out right or I can't think of anything, that's one of my go-to things, is sit down and just play through whatever song comes to mind and kind of relax or go for a walk. It just, when writing ticks me off, I either go for a walk or the piano, and it's just one of those two things.
Awesome. Well, speaking of your writing, getting back to that, do you have some of your writing with you tonight? Is there any part of your stories that you contributed to Southern Haunts, or maybe a part of Oblivion's Heart that you would like to read to us?
I have a part of Dead End, which is the story in the second Southern Haunts book.
All right, great. Yeah, let's go in and hear what you have. One of my things is I absolutely love to hear a story read from the author, because after you hear the author read their own story, then it completely transforms the way that the reader reads the story.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I will try not to stumble over this too much. He maneuvered past some of the rotten floorboards to a smaller room. He snapped a few pictures, then looked at them. Most of the pictures appeared normal, but it was next-to-last image that caught his attention. A rather large orb was in the right corner of the room. He could even see the reflection of it in one of the windows. Justin swallowed and felt like he was being watched by something. The room felt hot now, but maybe it was his imagination. He started back out of the room, but the door slammed. Justin! A voice hissed from the corner where the orb was captured. A whimper escaped his lips as his back hit the door. Pressure built on his chest as the chill ran down his spine. It was in the corner, crouching when he saw it. A silhouetted figure with red eyes. Justin turned and beat on the door, trying to open it with all his might. But it wouldn't budge.
Oh, I'm glad I have the lamp beside my bed tonight.
I know, right? God.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, do I have to listen to that like through a phone directly in my ear? I'm just kind of like crawling up the wall at the moment.
Oh, yeah. When I had read this story aloud to our better reader, because the better reader, she does two things. She reads the story herself, and then she listens to me read it to her. That way she has two options of receiving the story as it is. And when I got to your story, she just casually reaches over and turns another light on beside her. And I'm like, well, what's that for? She's like, you'll need it. Awesome. Well, that was definitely something to put people in the mood for Halloween. Now, as we are reaching the conclusion of our show, one of the things that I receive a lot of is, what are some of your favorite horror movies? People ask me this just so they can have some good suggestions on Halloween night. Sayla, Crystal, would y'all like to elaborate on maybe the top five best scary movies?
Oh, God.
My top one would be Psycho. Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Because it is, no one can do that like he can. I mean, it's just hands down.
The original House of Wax a lot, too. Sorry, no, you're fine. The original House of Wax, not the remake, but, like, the Vincent Price one. I just remember that entrancing me completely.
I love how the scene where the female is hitting Vincent Price against the face, and it's that typical 1950s hit where it's, like, with the softest part of her hand possible.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Nosferatu as well. Like, I was just talking about that with someone. The summer I graduated college and I worked all summer at the Lost Colony, for some reason, like, I watched that a lot after I would get home at work at, like, I don't know, 1 or 2 a.m. And I just love that movie. It's so entrancing.
Oh, I agree. I completely agree. Just extremely brilliant with the shadow usage.
Yeah.
And I'm not
just
talking about the vampire walking up the stairs in the shadow
wall.
I'm talking about shadow in general through the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I would have to say my number one pick would probably be Candyman. That
I
is the only
that.
Movie. Oh, that is the
I need
only
to watch that again.
Movie. Where, when I was a kid, I actually got up from the couch, turned off the VCR, and cried.
Yeah. Silence of the Lambs is pretty good, too. I mean, not quite in that same way, but just, like, in terms of the exchanges and just, like, the places that it takes your mind to is pretty awesome.
Well, it's more of a vocal movie. You have...
It is.
It
worms its way into your brain, really.
You have that little, you know, that how he does that.
Yeah. I always remember, and maybe it's because I'm a woman, but I always remember, like, that scene where, like, she goes to help what's-his-face Buffalo Bill, like, with a chair and the truck, and, like,
it's those moments that make your toes curl.
Yeah. For Halloween,
though,
I have to say, I love Trick or Treat, the movie. Like, that's
Oh, my God,
hardcore.
Yes.
Love that movie, yeah.
You know they're coming out with a sequel next year.
I'm so excited for that. You have no idea.
What might be some other titles for you, Crystal?
I don't know if you would count this. I would count it as horror, but The Zodiac. It was...
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that made it, like, terrifying was it actually happened, and I just love that movie. I've seen it 100 times.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of like Silence of the Lambs, where it's dramatic horror.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's dramatic horror, it's verbal horror, it's suspenseful horror.
One of the ones that I enjoyed watching, it wasn't really that scary, but the build-up behind it, The Woman in Black, it had those, oh my God, something's about to happen, and it didn't happen, and then you'd be like, oh, nothing's about to happen, and then something jumps out, and you end up jumping. That's one of the ones that I enjoyed watching other people watch, because they would freak out, and it would be so funny.
Yeah.
Have either of you ever seen The Changeling with George C. Scott?
I don't think so. It sounds familiar, but I don't think I've actually seen it.
There is one ghost movie that you have to watch this Halloween. Make it The Changeling, the George C. Scott version.
Yeah.
It is where a man has moved into this old mansion because he has now become a widower and his daughter has died, his whole family is gone. And so he moves into this mansion and all of these things just start to happen. And it's simple things too, such as just a key on the piano playing by itself. And chandeliers moving. I really think Paranormal Activity took a lot from this on the less is more scenario, but it actually plays out like a more modern version of the Haunting, the original one.
That book even, like, oh my God, that I wish I was Shirley Jackson. Like, oh.
Yeah. That one did do a number. I love how The Haunting came to be as a movie, because there was a film producer who was sitting in his office reading The Haunting of Hill House, and someone threw open the door, and
they were
going to inquire on a different movie, and he's like, okay, it's the middle of the day. You just scared me. I fell out of my chair. If this book has this kind of effect on me in the middle of the day, we need to make a movie.
I had, up to the point when I read the book, I'd only seen a sequel, and I was like, okay, whatever, I'll read the book. And oh my God, that like terrified me. The book is amazing.
Now I just have to go find
this book. It's amazing, and it's so open ended as to what's actually going on. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, because it never really gives you a 100% sure answer on if it's psychological or if it's really happening.
If it's real. Well, and the song in the book, there's this old like art song she keeps referencing, and I studied classical voice for 10 years, and that was one of the first songs I had to learn. So for me, like, even further, like, oh my God, that just like, oh, made my skin crawl to see that like used in such a way. Oh.
So can we say that if you have to read one ghost book this Halloween,
besides
Southern Haunts 2 and 3 and Part 1, you have to read Southern Haunts 1 and 2, just saying.
Oh, yeah.
But you might also want to grab The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson.
It's perfection.
Well,
I have a pile of to read books. Thank you, guys.
That's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, on my Facebook, I've been posting once a day, every day, a book of the day.
I just checked it out, so I haven't started it yet, but I'm really excited to read it.
It is so much fun. The Gates by John Connolly. Oh, my God. It's where, for like the three nights prior to Halloween, the lead character decides to get a head start and he stumbles across this mansion where there's a coven inside. And the funny thing is the coven accidentally
mm-hmm.
opens the gates of hell.
As one does.
Yes. But
I love it.
The book is suitable for the young adult crowd, but as an adult, I loved it.
Yeah. Well, I read the Halloween Tree every year in October. I haven't yet. I'm behind, but I love that book. Like, I Ray Bradbury is like my role model anyway, but oh my God, I love that book so hard.
What would be your hands down favorite horror book, Crystal? What would be the one book for people to read this Halloween?
I think it would probably be, it's not really horror, it's a thriller, but Where Are the Children by Mary Higgins Clark. That book just, it freaked me out. I could not put it down.
I agree with you. I've read that one. Have you had a chance to read it, Selah?
I have not, actually. I've heard of it, but I've not read it. I'm obviously really need to catch up on a lot.
It's a simple read. It's easy, fast. And what I like is the villain in this book is known by no other name than X.
Oh, Lord.
And
okay.
Yeah,
that was a very interesting part of the book. It was just...
Yeah. It really puts you in that seat where you're the one who's trying to figure out who took your children. Which is horrifying. I believe it's a terrifying thing.
I was sitting on the edge of my bed like, no, this can't happen. I don't want all the scenarios that are going through my head to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like one by one they started happening. I was like, okay, I can only see like one ending to this book and I really don't want that to happen. But I was I was sitting on the edge of my seat. I finished it in a day. And then I was like, everyone needs to read
this
book.
That's awesome.
Well, we are now approaching... the last 2 minutes of our show, so I think that we could use this time to perhaps go on and speak about where people can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, WordPress. Let's just go on and get that out there. Crystal, would you like to enlighten us first on how people can reach you?
I have a Facebook page. It's author C.G. Bush. And I have a Twitter. I'm not actually sure the name of it. I think it's Lost in My Books. But my blog is Crystal's Cavern. And that I use that sometimes, and I just post these really random stories that are sadly all completely true. So I haven't posted on that one in a while, though. But my author page is basically where I will post everything and anything that you can catch up with me on. There's also the Oblivion Trilogy page, and it's just under the Oblivion Trilogy on Facebook.
Awesome. All right, Selah, what about you? How can we hook up with you?
My author page on Facebook is facebook.com/authorsj. That's where I've been posting a lot there, actually. I've been doing pretty good with that. Twitter is @SelahJanelle, and it's spelled SelahJanel. And then my WordPress is, I've been trying to blog more lately, too. This is the one that, like, I always reverse it, SelahJanelle.wordpress.com. And I'm working on a website to make things simpler, but right now the blog is probably the go-to place, and Facebook as well.
Awesome. Well, I am a big Facebooker, so pretty much Facebook is probably the best way to connect with me. You can type in my email address, and that's going to bring me up immediately. TraumatizedBoy21@AOL.com. My fan page for Facebook is Alexander S. Brown, S as in Stephen. My Twitter handle is going to be Alexander S. Brown, altogether, no spaces. And on WordPress, You can find me by typing in traumatizedalexanderSBrown.wordpress.com. Or if you want to just make it simple, go to Google, type in Alexander S. Brown. The top three listings that come up, those are going to be the easiest ways to grab me.
Very cool. Or you could just harass you all the time like I do. Anyway,
yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on tonight, Crystal, and
oh,
thanks
no
for being
problem.
Here.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was fun.
Was
this
great
was a good time. Yeah.
Well, until next week, we will talk
That's
to
right.
you then. And, Crystal, we hope you have a great Halloween.
Oh, happy
yep.
Halloween, guys.
Awesome. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.